You're listening to 2024 in Review, a look back at some of the most compelling conversations and stories of the year from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.
You're listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
Chad said, "The kids are okay. It'll be cleared up in time. There's a simple solution." He calls Melanie Gibb, talking to her, you know, and if you listen back to the tape recording, basically, in essence, he's saying, "Where are the kids, Melanie? What's going on? I thought they were with you." He did say, "Don't lie to the police." Well, you know why? Because he thought Kate and Larry were in the process of trying to take the kids from Lori. Where did he get that from? Guess where? Lori Vallow. Chad didn't know where the kids were. Chad didn't know where the kids were until that fateful day on June 9th. When they're discovered on his property. Up until that time, Lori Vallow was selling to Jason William and anybody else who would listen the family attorney line. The kids are fine. And you heard Lori Vallow talk about it. If nobody knows about it, the better. She said that. Only I need to know what was going on. I'm the one who needs to know what's going on. And if nobody else knows anything, they can't do anything about it. That was the dupe on Chad Daybell. The kids are fine. It's all going to be cleared up. There's a simple solution. We're hiring a family law attorney to deal with it. They're not hiring a criminal defense attorney. So Lori Vallow's decision to hire a family law attorney and Chad going along with it, because there's a simple solution. Kids are safe. Everything's going to be fine. Mere presence, acquiescence, silent consent doesn't get you there, even if he knew there was a crime. Even if Chad Daybell knew, well, maybe the kids aren't safe. The testimony is everything's fine, simple solution. But even if you don't believe that, even if you don't accept that and say, how could he not know where the kids were? I want you to look at jury instruction number 18, mere presence at, acquiescence in, silent consent to. It doesn't get you there, and it doesn't mean he committed a crime. He's saying the kids are safe because Lori told him the kids are safe. He's saying it was a simple solution because this was a custody fight because Kay and Larry were trying to take the kids, JJ anyway, from Lori. Lori talked about that with Detective with one of the detectives on the 26th of November. He talked to Ron Ball, excuse me, Officer Ball's here, I think. Front row. Talked about it with Ron Ball. The other thing about that tape that you need to understand, and I didn't mean to go on this long, and I'm sorry, I guess I may not have been completely forthright. It's going to take a little longer than I thought, but I want to emphasize this stuff. I apologize for that. The other thing is when you listen to the tape with Ron Ball and the other officer, okay, you hear Lori Vallow talk about, well, I'm only here for a short while. And this is in September when they first started looking for where the kids are. And go back to your notes, go back to your memory, but then go back to the tape and listen to the tape where Lori Vallow says, well, I'm also going to be planning to move back with my friend Melanie Gibb. That was in September when she moved here. The kids were here and she's already planning. She hadn't even been here for very long, a couple months. And she's already planning on moving back, and she said it in her own words, with my friend Melanie Gibb. After being 2 months here. Okay, and that's important. Remember that. Jury instruction 18, acquiescence. And it's a big word, okay? And I looked it up in the dictionary. I'll admit that, okay? I looked it up because I know what silent consent is. But when you look up acquiescence, it says awareness, acceptance, compliance. I'm aware of it. All right, I'm accepting it. I'm going to go along with it. That's acquiescence. I'm going to just go along with what is going on. So even if you think Chad Daybell should have known, but there was no agreement, there was no evidence that he entered into this plan to do this. The prosecutor's overt acts talk about espousing religious beliefs. They don't mention an agreement, but they know. You got to have an agreement first before you get to the overt acts. I showed you that earlier. And acquiescence means I'm aware. I accept. I'll even comply. Mere presence, acquiescence in, or silent consent, the planning or commission of crime is not sufficient to make one an accomplice. Acquiescence, if there's no agreement, there's no plan to do that, and you don't have Chad Daybell with any evidence, the evidence that you're only supposed to consider that you have, he didn't commit a crime if that's what you believe. Now he's saying the kids were fine, they were being kept, and Lori Vallow was doing that. It was a simple solution. But if you don't believe that, acquiescence does not make it a crime, folks. And this isn't me saying this. This isn't some lawyer's argument. This is this judge's instruction. Acquiescence, in or silent consent to, is not sufficient to make one an accomplice. Okay. We're going to go back to the jury instruction 20 and talks about, again, the amended indictment again against Mr. Daybell for first-degree murder and grand theft by deception. And the important, The important part here is involves an agreement. Once again, it involves an agreement. Once again, conspiracy involves an agreement. You have to have an agreement for there to be a conspiracy. You have to have an agreement. There is no agreement. I want to talk a little bit about Exhibit 35 and 36. And those are exhibits that I submitted for your consideration. And if you remember, I had the officer on the stand, and I believe it was one of the state police officers, and I had them show you the handle of the shovel that was one of the many tools that were provided to them. And I zeroed in on the shovel, and this was the shovel that was at the scene of the crime. And it had dirt on it, had been, like it had been used, like someone had been shoveling with it on June 9th and June 10th, the day the bodies were removed from the ground. But I provided your exhibit number 35 and 36 for a reason. Because when you look at the very first pictures of the tools lined up in the corner in the barn, and you zoom in on that picture of the black shovel, you'll notice there's no dirt on the handle. And then on June 9th, later in the day, you see the shovel on the ground. Zoom in on the shovel, black shovel handles, folks, and magically there's dirt on the handle of the shovel. And then the subsequent pictures again on the 10th, there's dirt on the shovel. And then when the shovel gets to the state police and the officers up there from the lab, surprisingly, no dirt on the shovel handle, the black handle, the high end of the handle. No dirt in the beginning, dirt in the middle, no dirt on the end. And magically, surprisingly, those pictures are from June 9th and June 10th. The shovel and tools were used to dig. You heard from Officer Schmidt. Grab some shovels and start digging. They didn't say, grab the shovels that we brought. They didn't say anything like that. They said, grab the shovels and start digging. Now, how do we know that he's telling the truth? Because 35 and 36, and take the time and go over the pictures. Expand on those pictures of that black-handled shovel. And tell me, clean, first picture. Dirty, dirty, clean. They used the shovels. The police who were investigating this case used the shovels, and then magically we get a pickaxe, and magically we get another shovel. And guess what? Surprisingly, of the 18 tools, you heard from Dr. Hampinkian, not a drop of DNA of Chad Daybell is on any of the tools. Nothing else was tested. But ironically, you know, we found Tylee Ryan's DNA on a shovel and a pickaxe that were found right next to the shed with that black shovel that was used on June 9th and June 10th. Motive. I want to talk to you a little bit about motive. Alex Cox. He killed Charles Vallow in front of Tylee and JJ. You heard testimony. Alex Cox shot Charles Vallow once. And then he walks up to Charles Vallow while he's dying and puts another bullet in him. And who are two of the witnesses? Lori Vallow is not going to say anything against her protector. Lori Vallow is not going to do anything about her beloved brother. But Alex Cox knows there are two people, two expendable people in Alex Cox's mind who witnessed the murder of Charles Vallow. That would be Tylee Ryan and JJ Vallow. Tylee Ryan and JJ Vallow, the murder of Charles Vallow. they become expendable, because the one thing that can cause Alex Cox to spend the rest of his life, or far worse, in Arizona is a 16-year-old girl and an autistic 7-year-old little boy. Oh. Chad Daybell was not charged in that. Lori Vallow's charged. Again, what I told you before, we had Officer Duncan. No reasonable likelihood of conviction of Chad. Lori Vallow cared about a couple of things. Lori Vallow cared about money, and she cared about Lori Vallow, and she cared about Alex Cox. Now, how do we know Lori Vallow cared about money? We know Lori Vallow cared about money because I believe it was the third husband, Joseph Ryan. You heard evidence from the witnesses. Lori Vallow collected the insurance proceeds from the death of Joseph Ryan. Then the state went on and put on a tremendous amount of evidence. Tremendous amount of evidence. Charles Vallow, she was mad. She was really mad. She didn't get the money. Kay Woodcock is on top of it. She stopped that. And even when Lori tried to get the beneficiary changed, Lori didn't get her greedy hands on the money. And then what happens? The next victim, husband number five, just get insurance. Don't worry about saying there's any kids or any beneficiaries or anything like that. Honey, just say it's me and you. And while all of this is going on, all of this is happening, Chad's really good friend, Alex Cox, really close friend, is Googling how to put a bullet through the windshield in the side of a black Dodge Dakota that Chad Daybell primarily drives. The target was not Tammy Daybell. It was not Tammy Daybell. You heard testimony about the insurance. The target was not Tammy Daybell. He was the target. The driver of the black Dodge. How do we get it through the window? How do we get it through the side? Because once Chad is gone, once Chad is out of the way, guess what? Ryan's insurance. Kay Woodcock stopped the insurance from Charles Vallow, and she put an end to that. Lori Vallow's next victim, Chad Daybell, because Alex Cox was going to do something to him, and that gave Lori the straight line to pick up the next proceeds. And according to Lori Vallow's own statement on November 26th, with our friend Ron Ball there, I'm going to go back with Melanie. Okay. So Alex Cox had a motive. The motive was Alex Cox would be either spending the rest of his life in prison or far worse fate if JJ or Tylee even opened their mouth and said anything about observing or being there when Alex Cox decided to put the finishing touches and do the final bullet into Charles Vallow's chest while he was laying there dying. I want to talk a little bit about confirmation bias. We talked a little bit about that. It's when somebody starts an investigation or gears themselves. We talked a little bit about that with Dr. Christensen, how he made the determination at the end. And he said, well, you know, it's between, we don't know what happened, or homicide. But then I looked at all the police reports, and the police officers provided me with all of the police reports. They provided me with all of the evidence. And when I looked at all of this massive pile that Miss Blake went through of all the evidence that they provided at my request, I said, you know, this is going to be homicide instead of undetermined. But then you ask them, why didn't you call the kids? Because you requested information from the police. Why didn't you request information from the kids? Why didn't you ask them? Because they wanted to know why their mother was exhumed with no basis or explanation to them for doing it. And they didn't hear anything for 14 months. No explanation. So call, Dr. Christensen, call these children and say, can you tell me anything about their medical history? Can you tell me anything about whether your mother was feeling ill, whether she was fainting, whether she was having seizures, whether her anemia was inflamed, and the last questioning was, whether she had inflammation in the lungs that was never brought up and why her lungs were filled. Give us something. Tell me something. But that didn't happen. Confirmation bias means you pick a target and you go after whatever evidence you have to make that target look like that person is guilty. And all of them in the audience with the suits, that's exactly what they did. That's exactly what they did. Gibb and Warwick were ignored. Gibb and Warwick were ignored. They didn't get DNA evidence from them. They didn't get phone records from them. They did nothing. At the end, they took a hair sample for I think, Melanie in 2020. There was a hair sample in 2020 from Melanie. Didn't do anything with it. On the 22nd and 23rd, in Lori Vallow's apartment, there were four people in that apartment. On the day that J.J. Vallow was murdered, Lori Vallow was there. J.J. Vallow was there. Melanie Gibb was there. David Warwick was there. And the prosecutor talked about a phone call to Chad. Go back and look at the notes, folks, and you'll see that it was actually a text message that Melanie sent to Chad. It went unanswered for 8 or 9 hours. Melanie was kind of cover her tracks. She was trying to say, well, you know I'm here. This is what's going on. Me and my good friend, this is what happened to JJ. And, there were all of this stuff. And the biggest complaining witness against Chad Daybell, all of this religious stuff, all of these facts, all of this stuff about, you know, Chad teaching people about his religious beliefs, it came from Melanie Gibb, the one person who has everything to lose. David Warwick and Melanie Gibb were present at the time that J.J. Vallow was murdered. Chad Daybell's phone on the 23rd, no location information. No Google information. Now, you heard from the officer, I think it was Stubbs, who said, well, he turned the Google off. What about the phone? What about all the apps? What about all the other ways that Patrick Eller talked about you could find and locate a phone on a piece of property if he was there? And yet we didn't hear anything about that. Because on the 23rd, when JJ's body was dumped in the ground by Alex Cox and dug that hole, Chad Daybell was not there. And ironically enough, Look back at your notes and look back when Melanie Gibb and David Warwick said, well, we left town that morning. Alex Cox left at 9:21 to drive toward Chad Daybell's property. Melanie Gibb and David Warwick claim that at 9:30, well, we were on our way to Pocatello. Show me the phone records, David. Show me the phone records, Melanie Gibb. Because Melanie Gibb and David Warwick went on a little ride to Chad Daybell's property, and David's his construction consultant, and they had to say whatever they have to say to get out of this. Offer whatever information they need to this prosecuting attorney to convince them that, oh, we weren't involved, even though we were there at the night of the murder. We have nothing to do with this. We know nothing. And yet, ironically, within 10 minutes after Alex Cox leaves, 10 minutes later, Melanie Gibb and David Warwick. So how did the body of JJ get in the back of the trunk from Lori Vallow's apartment with Melanie and David there? 10 minutes later, three people, simple as can be. Now, September 9th, again, same cast of characters, same folks, same people. Alex Cox, Lori Vallow, Tylee Ryan. You saw a text message from Chad Daybell at 10:57. Shot a raccoon, burned some limbs. No location device on September 9th with Chad Daybell on the property. No Google information, no apps, no evidence to show that Chad Daybell was there. Earlier in the day, yeah, he buried a raccoon. He started a small fire, burned some limbs. And he told his wife about it. Okay. And we know that he shot a raccoon, Regan Price. Remember Regan Price? Regan Price is the one who said early in the morning she heard a shot. She didn't see anything else. She didn't see anything else out there. But Regan Price heard a shot in the morning. Okay. And if there's a hole to be dug in the pet cemetery, we know why. If there's ground that was disturbed, we know why. Because Chad Daybell in his text message to his wife said, I shot a raccoon. And Reagan heard the shot. Reagan heard the shot. But Reagan didn't see anything else. Then we get to Dr. Eric Bartolink. Dr. Bartolink, remember? Forensic anthropologist? The fire guy. The guy who tested the bodies that are contributed to his program to see how long it would take to burn. What did he say? He didn't say you needed a lot of accelerant. It wasn't as much accelerant. What it was a bonfire, folks. Where was the bonfire on September 9th? Because Regan Price didn't see anything. Because there was no bonfire. There was no bonfire. It wasn't there. The body was burned as a whole. I can't prove to you where Alex Cox burned this body. I don't know. What I do know is that the body was burned as a whole. I do know the body was burned as a whole, because that's what Dr. Bartling said. I also know that what Dr. Bartling said is there is no explanation, and it couldn't have just been the fire, that a large number of remains of Tylee were not found at the scene. They were not discovered there.
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.